Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, as we kick off with the first episode of a brand new season. Our first guest has swapped South Wales for the South Coast and is chomping at the bit to get started with his side's first game in the Sky Bet Championship.
I understand the opportunity that I have and we have as a coaching staff now, and I'm incredibly grateful for that opportunity, and I'm going to give everything I can to make the most of that, but also want to enjoy it, and I want them to enjoy it. And we will all really enjoy it if we can achieve something really special this season.
And equally hungry and equally excitable, we'll be chatting to a gentleman who got his side promoted last season in spectacular fashion and is about to embark on a very new and very different challenge this season.
It'll be interesting. I think we ideally we want to be, if you break the league table into three eights, I think we want to be in that second eight. But obviously the ambition is to try and be in a top eight.
It's the official EFL podcast. So we go again in the EFL with fresh hope, renewed optimism and faces both new and familiar this season. A man with a new club, but is certainly familiar to us all, is the man leading the Southampton charge in the Championship. It's their new boss, Russell Martin. Russell, a pleasure to see you, my friend. How are you?
Likewise. I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well.
So you're in there, you've had a few weeks. What's your thoughts? Initial expectations, initial reflection on being the new Saints boss?
Yeah, it's been great. I've really enjoyed working with the players. So the place is amazing, the facilities and the amount of people we have and how open they've been with us and receptive to how we work has been amazing. And the players as well. Like the first week, you could still sense, you know, a little bit of disappointment and a bit of a hangover from last year. And then hopefully we've given them enough to realise it's going to feel a bit different. And that what they're being asked to do is very different, and they have a chance to really show a good version of themselves on and off the pitch. And that's just built week on week, the feeling between us and the connection between what they're doing and with us as a coaching staff and stuff. So I've been really delighted with that. I've been really pleased with that. I thought, you know, coming in and experiencing it myself when you've been relegated from the Premier League is so difficult. But I hope that enough of them feel infused by the amount of change there's been to be excited about this season and what they're doing.
That was a key thing I saw from bits and bobs leading up to being able to talk to you about your experience as a player relegated in two out of four seasons from the Premier League, how that can affect a player, how you need to change that mindset somewhat. But very on brand for the EFL podcast as well. You were saying how much you enjoy the Championship and playing football in the Championship. So somewhere in the middle is where that all melts together, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, listen, when I first got promoted to the Premier League and when it was new and you're playing it for the first time, and also we just attacked it. So the first time I got promoted from Norwich, we went from League One to the Premier League back to back. It was just amazing momentum and feeling, and we carried that on and really attacked it. By the third season, we were just surviving and we were just hanging on and we didn't quite survive. So the feeling was totally different and it was much less enjoyable. Everything about the Premier League is great. Obviously, what comes with it, and you dream of playing in it, like, amazing when you get there. But even by the end of the third year and you're just trying to grind out a win and stay in the league, and that mentality is really difficult for players at times. And then you end up back in the Championship, and after you've been relegated from the Premier League, there's an expectation. I played for a club in the Championship that the supporters expected to be right up there every season. So then that comes a totally different mindset and a different challenge to what you faced. And I always really enjoyed that. Like, I really enjoyed the relentlessness of the Championship, the amount of games. In the Premier League, sometimes you play a game and then you don't play again for 10 days, or you have an international break, you don't play for like 3 weeks. And so, like, when you're not in a team and building rhythm and stuff can be difficult as well. Listen, the Premier League's where everyone wants to be, of course, and it's, you know, but I think when you are there, sometimes you get caught up in it all, and it's not as enjoyable as it should be, and you lose sight of what how much you wanted to be there and all that stuff. So now the players have a chance to, rather than trying to survive, have a chance to try and win and to achieve something and to show a version of themselves that maybe a lot of people haven't seen, or they haven't seen yet, or they haven't felt. And I think that's the exciting part for them now, and the exciting part for us is to try and bring that out in them.
I know you've always been very keen to foster a really tight, close-knit group. Did that affect coming away from Swansea? Was it a wrench on a personal level to move from one club to another?
Yes, it was. It was really painful, to be honest. And I will miss a lot of people at Swansea, the players, the staff, because the Swansea as a place and a club, the people are amazing. The biggest strength for that club is the supporters, how good they were with us on and off the pitch, with our families, the players, the staff. Most of the staff support Swansea from there. Mm. Been there a long time. Incredible place, mate. And like the amount of tears my kids have had over leaving Swansea, that's not easy, right? Like the players put on a leaving do for us, where they pretty much every one of them turned up with their families and the staff, and that was just incredible. And so, like for us, the biggest thing at MK when we left was the connection we had with the people and the players, and that's just been heightened again at Swansea because we spent a bit longer there. We moved there, lock stock, all of us, the coaches. So there's five of us and the extended people outside out with our families and stuff, like numbers over 20. And I think that's the side people just don't see. So to move schools again, to move house and from a place where they were so settled, was not easy. And also us, because about we felt we were building something, and the players were just so grateful for what they gave us. Like, I love that group of players and the staff. So leaving them was not easy because of how we choose to be and how we choose to feel. And we genuinely felt so connected with all them. But I think, like, that's where there's beauty in that pain, isn't there? The fact that we've actually had them relationships and we've actually felt that. And trying to say that to my kids and them to understand that it should be painful when you leave somewhere that you've loved. Otherwise, if we left there and we didn't feel any way towards it, and people didn't feel any way towards us, then it's kind of like a wasted 2 years, or you haven't maximised what you've got, really. So, it wasn't easy. And there were a few people that were interested in maybe taking us or wanting to talk to us, but once this came about, it was really clear to me and to us that this was the one for us. And what we felt already since we've been here is just an incredible openness to try something different, to work in the way we want to work. And we want to build on the brilliant stuff they've done over the last few years here. And a lot of that has been, you know, based on an intensity against the ball and a way of doing things there. So we want to maintain a lot of that and retain a lot of that, but also bring our own spin and our way of doing things. And so far, so good. We've really enjoyed it. And you know, building relationships quickly. And I hope to feel as much pain when I leave here eventually. And hopefully that's not for a long time, but I hope to feel the same pain as I did. Because then it means there's been something there, and we've created something.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's such a beautifully put thing. The pain is a direct reflection of the love that you feel for that entity that you're leaving. But as you say, and I'd like to think that people listening to this, because we do see football from having had the pleasure of being inside of it, don't we? Of knowing how brutal it can be, knowing how kind of near the knuckle a lot of it actually is, and how the side of it that you're talking about sometimes isn't seen. And I think if you are a Swansea fan listening to this, you kind of go, oh, it stings a bit even more now listening to you hear that. But if you're a Southampton fan, I think there's, and knowing a few Southampton fans with my past connections and extended family all being Southampton fans, no pressure, Russell. they should be very, very happy indeed that they've got someone like you in charge. And I think dovetailing into that as well, any team that comes out of the Premier League after such a long period of time will have players that spark interest in other clubs. But if you really dig down deep into it, the young players that Southampton have got coming through, the likes of Small, Charles, Livermento, of course, we've seen a lot of Alcaraz, and the players with Championship experience, Nathan Teller, Will Smallbone, Adam Armstrong, Che Adams, Ryan Manning, people like that, there may be some, presumably, ins and outs, bit of business to be done from your point of view. But what you've got there to work with, thinking about what the Championship requires and demands, that seems to me why you look so happy doing what you're doing and the challenge that you're about to embark on.
Yeah, the group we have is like, as you just said, it's such a nice blend. So we're quite young, but even some of the young ones we have like have brilliant experience. So like Adam Armstrong is not old, Che Adams is not old, but they have a lot of experience in this league. And and I think that like that we have players who are just desperate to prove that they are actually really good at football, and they are. And some of them feel like they haven't had the opportunity to do that, or they haven't had the amount of minutes they want on the pitch. And in the Premier League, to do that is difficult sometimes. So it's like just to get them to seize the opportunity we have. Like I understand the opportunity that I have and we have as coaching staff now, and I'm incredibly grateful for that opportunity, and I'm going to give everything I can to make the most of that. And but I also want to enjoy it, and I want them to enjoy it, and we will all really enjoy it if we can achieve something really special this season. It's not going to be easy. Like, I think it's like a third of teams end up getting promoted back out of the league at the first time of asking. It's really not easy. But I think the journey, what we're trying to do with them, it's just going to be really exciting. And I am so happy to be working with a squad of players that possess so many different tools, really. I think when we were at Swansea, it was really clear we lacked a couple of bits, and we were never able to add that for one reason or the other. And that will
look, it was a real sense of frustration, wasn't it, turn of the year for you?
I'll be eternally frustrated at that, because I really felt we could have maybe achieved something more than we could have achieved something, but we didn't. That is what it is. But here is like when you put all the lads into the pot and the mountain pot, and you know, there's so many different characters, different traits, different strengths. It's our job to obviously put the best one on the team, but to build some sort of relationship and chemistry between players that when they take to the pitch, they really feel it and they understand what each other need and what each other want. And I think that's so exciting for us.
And given, Russell, the logistics and the framework of what Southampton have got down there, which comes with consistent Premier League membership, doesn't it? The training ground, the stadium, the infrastructure. For a coach as hands-on as yourself and a coaching staff as hands-on as the ones that you've got, it must be manna from heaven, because it looks, without putting too much pressure on you, that you've got absolutely everything that you need for the way that you want to work.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, like, the training ground's incredible as a facility. The amount of staff we have to help facilitate the players and give them everything we need. I don't think as a player you could ask for anything else. Like, it's a Premier League training ground infrastructure, there's no doubt about it. It's a beautiful place to come to work every day. So there is no excuse, really. Perhaps I'd like to come in and say, no, but there isn't. Everything here is set up for us, and it's set up in a way that we can really achieve something. We'll give it our very, very best. We'll give everything we've got. We'll treat it like it's the club we've supported since we were kids. It's how we choose to do it. And we'll give the players a lot of care, the staff a lot of care and a lot of detail, and the rest will take care of itself. But in terms of coming into work every day and as a place and the feel around it, yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place.
And have you come across fans in the street? Have you bumped into the kind of the real meat of the Saints supporting section? And are they quite forward in telling you what they want, what they expect, what they need from this season?
Yeah. I think they've been good. So my last 5 weeks in Swansea was spent bumping into Swansea fans walking a dog along the beach every day, and they were great. They were like really great with me and just wishing me luck and all that. Mm. That was amazing. So I was really grateful for that. And then since I've been here, it's been the same. But the games haven't started yet, so everyone has been really pleasant and really excited about the season. And we've bumped into a lot because we've been living in a hotel in Southampton for 4 weeks. So we finally
as a family or
no. So my family have still been in. They finally moved now, but they've been in Swansea still while the kids finished school and all that stuff. So on days off, we've all been doing a long drive back to Swansea, but now finally everyone's down there and getting settled, which makes things so much easier. And which is obviously the side of things people don't see, is like being away from your kids and them having all the change they're going through as well. But the Southampton fans we bumped into, and there's been a lot, they've been amazing. They've been, really receptive. I think some guy said to me after the game the other day at St Mary's, the playing out from the back's a bit scary, Russ. So, get used to that. So, but on the whole, I mean, that's the only sort of half negative comment that we've had so far. But on the whole, they've been amazing. I'm really, the way they've taken us, we went to Reading away for pre-season. There was well over 1,000 people. The reception we got was just amazing. It blew me away a little bit that it was like that already. And, I just really want to repay the support everyone's given us, the owners, Jason Wilcox, the staff here, and obviously the supporters, because I always say it, they are the most important people at any club that outlast anyone. So, I've been really, really grateful and really touched by the reception we've got. And it's our job to obviously give them something to feel connected to and to be proud of now.
So presumably on your list of things to tick off, somewhere to walk the dog is pretty high on that. Have you found that particular part of the South Coast and where you can take your
dog. Yeah. The dog's happy, so he's not going to be on the beach every day like he was in Swansea, but I think he got a bit sport. But he's happy with the woods and a couple of parks, so he's good.
Good to hear, mate. So it's Wednesday for you to kick off on a Friday night, first game of the season, a bit of a trek up north, back towards where we are at this end of the country. What do you want for, barring of course, a win being the top of the list, what do you want from that first game of the season? Because the great unique element from our point of view is it's the only game. We're all watching it in the Championship. Focus is on. And there'll be people gunning for you. What's your first port of call from that game?
Well, 3 points, obviously, as you said, is the aim. But I remember watching Burnley last season and being really intrigued against Huddersfield the first game of the season. We were in a hotel, we were playing away, and being really intrigued about what we were going to see. And the amount of teams that are going to be in hotels on a Friday night watching it, the amount of people, like you said, it's the first game, so everyone who loves football watch the first game, right?
Yeah.
So what I want us to do is be brave enough to put what we've worked on the pitch, and we're going to learn so much about the players tomorrow night. So that's really exciting for us and really interesting for us. And what I want them to feel, the players, is enough evidence on the pitch that they're going to really enjoy themselves this season. There's going to be some really brilliant moments. There'll be some scary moments as well, no doubt about it. It's how they come through them in the game, and this season will define us, I think. Because I think they'll have plenty of really good moments as well. And in terms of supporters and what they see, what other people are watching and what they want to see is, like, I can't really control, but I hope they look at us and go, okay, the team already has a clear identity. Like, Southampton are going to be a good team. They're going to be well organised. They're going to play in a certain way. You can feel that the players are believing in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I want the fans to go away to feel excited about what they're going to see and proud of the team that they're going to have, because we're going to go and try and be the team we want to be everywhere we go. And the biggest test for us will be tomorrow night, the first time they've done it in front of a huge crowd, what we're asking them to do. Because they've all played football for a number of years and they've all played in front of big crowds in the Premier League. But now what we're asking them to do is very different and takes the ultimate courage. And tomorrow's going to be a big test of that. And if they come through it and show that, then I think it's going to give us and the fans and the players and the staff enough to feel excited about and enough to feel like this can be a really brilliant season for everyone.
The great thing is as well, just to round off, is that you want them to be excited, but I can see, obviously, talking to you right now, that you're excited. You're ready to go. You've got that glint in your eye about something new and something bold and something courageous, and that kind of foresight is really. It makes me want to put on a pair of boots. I mean, I'd knacker the whole thing for you by actually getting on the pitch and ruining your game. Yeah, perhaps you meant to play it from the back as I'm shelling it long and off the pitch. But it's that type of feeling that you think, as a player, former player, a fan, it's just exciting. And football should be exciting, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. I want to be excited about watching my team play, and I want to enjoy watching the team play. And I lost a bit of excitement for 2 months last year. It was really, really interesting for me, and I feel like I've learned so much from that. And I got it back. I got it back by the time March came round, and it coincided with us being on a brilliant run at Swansea. And like, as a manager and a leader, your energy is everything, really, because it just rubs off on people, and players can feel it and stuff. So I hope my excitement has passed on to a few of the players, at least. And we are seriously excited about the group of players we have to work with, about the opportunity we have, about what we can achieve, about the work that is to come, that is yet to come. And just excited about the Championship in general this year, about who knows what's going to happen, mate. I really haven't got a clue. But if we are going to try and enjoy as much of it as possible. And of course, when you win, and you win a lot, it is even more enjoyable. But we're going to try and get everyone here to enjoy what they're doing and enjoy watching what they're doing, and hopefully that means we'll win a lot, and we will see. But I'm really up for the journey. I'm really excited about it, and wherever it takes us, we'll give it everything we got.
That'd be a great tagline for the podcast, wouldn't it? It's the Championship. Who knows what's going to happen, mate? I might try and like, get that over the top of the titles somewhere. Russell, it's been a pleasure. I know you've got a long journey north. Just as a bit of travel advice, bring your thermals, bring all your waterproofs. It's now autumn, I think, up here.
Right, so I'm hoping for t-shirt and trousers first game of the season. So is that not going to be doable? And he's going to buy a jumper.
I might have to put all the, for you and us also, all the summer game I have to go. If I'm stood there in a Mac with a brolly, you can come over and gently take the mickey, I should say.
I might need to borrow a Mac, mate, if that's the case.
Right, Russell, thank you so much, my friend. We wish you all the very best for the season. Joining us on the official EFL podcast, Russell Martin. Thank you very much. So, of course, we're back at it in the EFL, and we've all had a long summer waiting for football to come back. Some have had a longer summer than most. That happens if you win promotion in April. You also win the league in April. And then you've got such a long time to celebrate and react and enjoy every single part about it, just like Richie Wellins and Leighton Orient have had at their disposal. Richie, it feels like an awfully long time. You must be chomping at the bit to get going again.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I've ever really experienced that, when it's done so early and you can have like probably four or five promotion parties on the pitch. It's a little bit surreal, but I have to say, once you've done it once or twice, then it kind of, you let the players enjoy it, but the standard of training comes down, that focus is lost, especially with the last two games of the season. And you just want to get back cracking. Obviously, the memories are there for us all to savour at a club like Leighton Orient, the first trophy in, well, the first league trophy in 53 years. It's special for everybody. But we want to try and make new memories now and try and push a club on and not just be, okay, we're joining the numbers, we've moved up a level and we just want to survive. We want to try and build over the next two or three years to try and create bigger and better memories.
That's the key thing, isn't it? It's that approach of a club after promotion. The fans that you hear, that you speak to, that you see, they're all hungry and level-headed enough to know that consolidation would be the first port of call. But looking around League One before a ball's even been kicked, is there a quiet confidence with you and your boys?
I think actually League One is, League Two this year is, who wins that? I have no idea. The Championship is probably the strongest Championship that he's ever really been. So League One's actually a little bit where there's three relegated clubs. Blackpool are going to be strong because Critchley is a good manager, but he just lost Jerry Yates, who's a big player for them. Reading have obviously got their issues going on. Wigan are minus eight. You've then got Barnes that have lost the manager, you don't know. So these are a lot of clubs that, you know, some of them, a lot of them might be very, very good. But also a lot of them are a little bit transition. Portsmouth will be strong, but got a load of new players. Charlton will be strong, but got a load of new players. So it'll be interesting. I think we ideally we want to be, if you break the league table into three eights, I think we want to be in that second eight. But obviously the ambition is to try and be in the top eight.
You mentioned players of other clubs and other clubs in maybe in a state of a bit of flux. But with regards to Orient, with Lawrence Vigoro moving on and Paul Smith, but then you've got new contracts for likes of Jordan Brown. I suppose, given your experience as a manager so far, is that just what the end of the season throws up after you've had a successful season? You know how to get teams promoted, but you also know the industry, there's always going to be people looking at your best players. There's always going to be offers elsewhere for best players. And it's about making sure that your recruitment, that's such a key word that you hear from managers, is absolutely spot on, isn't it?
Yeah, the recruitment, but also the continuity that we have. When we won it at Swindon, I lost 80% of my starting outfield players, and that had a massive effect. Only that, then the budget was reduced drastically because of COVID. So we tried our very best to keep the squad together. We kept more or less everybody that we wanted to keep. Unfortunately, when Burnley come for Lawrence Vigoro, it's impossible to keep him at the club because the financial deal that he got is so far above what we can pay. Then, do you know what? You wish Lawrence all the best. It's a fantastic move for him and his family. But you also take a lot of satisfaction that Lawrence has played the last 8 years in League Two, a flicker in League One for a season. But we've been with him for 15 months and asked him to do certain things and develop as a character, and then all of a sudden he gets a move to the Premier League. So we take great satisfaction with that. Similar to Paul, it was the other side of the M25. He actually lives in and around Reading. So the QPR, obviously, situation better for his young family. So we just congratulate him, lads, and move on. But for me, whenever I see people go and get double promotions, the Southamptons, the Norwiches, when they go from League One or whoever it may be, the Lutons, I do see a lot of continuity in the squad, momentum, and if you can keep that spirit and not break it, sometimes if you do get a promotion, especially when you go to the higher levels and you get rid of all the really, really good lads and you start spending a load of money on players, it can disjoint the group a little bit. So we tried our best to keep everyone together. We think we've recruited as well as we possibly could. For me, the biggest thing for any manager will tell you that if your recruitment team get it right, it makes your job a hell of a lot easier.
What also helps, of course, is if you've got a decent relationship with the owner. Nigel Travis seems to me to be a man that has got everything in the right place, including head, heart, everything to do with running a football club, manager in place. What's your working relationship like with him? What's it like on a day-to-day basis? How is it compared to other management structures you've worked underneath?
I think in terms of a day-to-day running of the club, that's left down to Martin Ling and Mark Devlin. You know, Nigel's over in America with Kent Teague. The majority of the board is over in America. Matt Porter, who's an excellent guy, he's obviously CEO of Matchroom. So in terms of day-to-day running the club, my protocol is Martin Ling or Mark Devlin. But he's always on the end of the phone. We have regular text message conversations or conversations over the phone. It might be about American football. It might be American sport. It might be...
a fan of American football, American sport?
I am, apart from baseball. I think baseball's a little bit too slow. I mean, basketball's a lot of breaks. American football, I really like, is a lot of breaks. But baseball's just too far.
We have
loads of conversations about different things. It's not about football. And I think the biggest two things that I can say about him, one, he's just a really, really good guy. Mm-hmm. And two, his love of the football club is he's a supporter, but he doesn't get that. He doesn't get sucked into the things that
the history
other supporters who own the football club get sucked into. He's very, he's very patient. He's very understanding, and he understands the nature of business obviously very well. I think he understands the running of a football club very well. In terms of other clubs that I've worked at, I've worked for foreign owners that you don't see at all. But then the communication problems can happen, especially when it comes to paying wages at the end of the month, which at League One, League Two level is very important to our lads. I've worked for people who are football people and in their day-to-day, so they're in there every day. And I've also worked for people who are there day-to-day, but not really football people. So I've probably gone the whole spectrum.
And do you, because having known former colleagues and teammates that have ventured into management and coaching, and it's a very educational route to get to the top level, isn't it? Because of the qualifications that you need. Have you found that you need that basis behind you, but is it a constant learning on the job? Is it a constant dragging from your experiences about how to use certain aspects of what you know and how to deal with certain people?
Yeah, you're always learning. If you stand still, people will overtake you. That's without doubt. But I think one of the biggest things is, as you get more experience, you've seen it before. Whereas you're younger, you might have had a knee-jerk reaction on, I've done something so quickly. I've seen it before. Sometimes I might not even say anything. Sometimes I might react in a different way. Sometimes I might let the older pros in a dressing room deal with it. So I think experience allows you to obviously call upon certain things where you're enabled to not make a small situation bigger. And then if it's a big situation, try and nip it in the bud as quick as possible. So I think a lot of managers will tell you that you're always learning. And the biggest thing for me is when a lot of players retire, they say, I'm going to be a coach and I'm going to be a manager. Well, what people have been doing this for 5, 6, 7, 8 years before you think of retiring. I think one of the biggest things that happened to me is when I was 34, I'd done my ACL, which I realised then the end was coming. And then I was going out to local colleges, local universities and taking sessions and finding out what worked for me, working on things at how I wanted my football team to look. It's no good saying, I've retired, and then within you can do your A and your B now within a year. Well, it's okay, you're getting the certificate, but what have we actually learned? So I think it's important that you get the way that you want. Okay, we're going to play 4-2-3-1. What does that 4-2-3-1 look like? When you win the ball, when you lose the ball, all things like that. It's so, you look at someone like Pep Guardiola, and he's the, apart from Sir Alex, who was a different era in terms of tactics, everybody now, there's a lot of good coaches in the EFL, really, really good coaches. But you look at someone like Pep, who is evolving all the time to try and win a Premier League. I think he's cracked the Premier League, and then he's thinking, well, how can I get the Champions League? And then he's sending fullbacks in, which when you ask a fullback to go in midfield, the recovery out wide is sometimes against top players is too big.
Yeah.
But when you're putting John Stones in midfield and it's a straight line run, the recovery run can be a little bit quicker. So when someone like that is always thinking of new ideas, sometimes he plays his wingers, well, a lot of the time he plays his wingers really, really wide and his eights really wide. Mm-hmm. Are you going to go man-to-man mark that and leave gaps to hit Haaland's feet? And then once it goes into his feet, he's set and he's getting run. So if someone like that is forever trying to, you know, evolve and enhance himself, I think us at lower levels are always trying to strive to get levels. We have to keep learning on a daily basis. And for me, I'm always trying to tap into the players about what can we do more, how can we influence the opposition.
It's fascinating to hear. And don't worry, I'm going to be paraphrasing everything you've just said there and pass it off as my own the next time I'm watching a Man City game. I'll be telling everyone in the pub exactly what I think about the way that they play. This just jogged my memory about a chat that we had when we were working, covering some of the games towards the end of last season, when you were sat with Steve Evans, of course, another manager who knows all about promotion. And you were talking about that kind of, not dilemma, but you're talking in a very kind of structured coaching way. But having played against you as well a very long time ago, that fire in your belly, I think, is absolutely paramount to what makes you the competitor that you are. And you were talking to me about sometimes that instant reaction to things that happen on the pitch and that very quick-witted response to people, which you said you wanted to temper a little bit. But I thought about it on the way home, and I thought, well, that inherently makes Richie Wellens Richie Wellens, and Richie Wellens is successful. So it must be tough to think that I've got to be the boss, I've got to show I'm in control, I've got to make sure that I'm setting an example. But that spark is what makes you you.
Well, I think if you're one-toned and you won, then it can be a little bit boring. My players trust me now, so they know that, listen, there's a line that's crossed, and there's a determination and a hunger to succeed. And when I walked into Leighton Orient, it was very blasé, it was very relaxed. And all of a sudden, they've got someone that, okay, sometimes I join in training and I'll have a laugh and a joke and I see little pictures in training. But then when we start the serious work, then my tone changes. It's about winning now. It's about taking on information and making sure that when we cross that line, if you don't do it right, if you're not prepared to run, to fight, to listen to tactics and do all this stuff, you know what's going to happen? You're going to get embarrassed by thousands of people who are watching you, and they're going to happen. So I give the players the best chance. But the thing that I've learned most, Dave, is when I was a young player, probably up until the age of 26, 27, probably until I met Sean O'Driscoll, a lot of mine was, I still think I was demanding off my teammates and saying the right things, but the way that I got it across was too abrupt. It was too sometimes vicious. And then Sean pulled me and said, listen, we listen to what you say. You're right. Tactically, you're very clever. You understand the game, this, that, the other. But your teammates will have a lot more respect if you deliver it in a different way. So I think now, that's not to say that when I played for Doncaster under Sean, it happened straight away. There were still moments where you know, he was... there was confrontation
still
with me, mate. But again, when I walked into a dressing room at Doncaster, it was flickering in the middle of League One. And within 12 months, the lads are playing in the Championship. Some of them got really, really good moves. So I did like to inject that bit of fire into people. I think that's carried me on to my managerial career. But I do deliver it now in a real different way. Again, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I speak very little. I empower the coaches to take the sessions. We drip feed things in terms of what we're going to do on a Saturday. And then it saves my voice, it saves my energy. And then when it comes to Friday, I feel like I come alive. And then obviously I'll take the most of the preparation work for the Saturday.
I suppose, what you're saying there rings so many bells with managers that I have the pleasure of speaking to, that generational shift. The ones who are a bit more pessimistic say, oh, you can't talk to players anymore. The ones that are a bit more positive say you have to speak to players differently, which sounds like you got it right in the meat of your playing career, which then means when you get to being a coach with your experience, but still being a relatively young man in the coaching game, that's because it's the building of relationships, isn't it? Yes, you need to be able to set a team up, but if that group of men, players, whoever it is, doesn't want to go out and fight for you, then you've got no chance, have you?
Well, I'm also quite lucky. I've got a 20-year-old lad who... I kind of seen his journey through. Who's a young footballer who's just been released from Man United, so I've seen him grow up. Mm. And whereas a manager might just say one tiny little throwaway comment that is not really hurt, he's not meant to hurt anybody. Mm. That little comment can sit in that young player's mind and infest itself in him for quite a long time. So you have to be really careful what you say. You have to set demands on young players. The older players, you know, we've got Darren Prattley, Adam Thompson, Omar Beckles. I can ask, say what I want to them, and they're really comfortable in coming back to me and having really strong conversations. But some of the younger lads, you have to try and understand them. These young kids have, you know, they've grown up in a different environment to what we did. So I do get that. When I watch young players and I see the body language and I see all this, I can relate to it because I've seen my own son go through that. My son's a really talented boy, top technician. But in terms of the characteristics and the resilience and all the mental things, that he needs to develop that hugely. And I see that a lot across academy football when they're trying to take that step from academy football to first team level. But it's important that the coaches and the manager especially understand what is needed from that individual. I do think that in over the last three or four years, the young players that I've worked with, I've signed and they've done really well. Mm-hmm. They've gone back to the parent club and got it back in the first team, or they've actually got a really good move. There's several examples where they've gone back to the parent club and they've signed huge contracts at Premier League clubs. So I like to think that, and young players reward you so much. If you do get into them on a one-to-one basis, you know what? They very rarely let you down if you give them a lot of trust.
Well, it's certainly a method that's helped you and served you and the club well, given your success last season in League Two. You mentioned it at the top of the chat. Let's just dip a toe back into that particular division. Obviously, the very sweeping consensus seems to me that people are saying Wrexham and Notts County are going to be the ones that are going to duke it out. You know, day to day, week to week, it's nowhere near as straightforward as any of that. You can have a big budget, you can pay players certain X, Y, and Z. Doesn't mean to say that it automatically transfers onto the pitch. So having seen the teams that you've left behind, having seen the teams that have come up into that league, what's your initial thoughts on what people are throwing around as favourites?
I think automatically everybody does say Stockport and Wrexham, because inevitably 90% of football, you look at the league table, the teams with the most money are usually in the top one, two and three. So I think that's it's an easy option, but sometimes it can be a lazy option. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a lot of good managers in League Two. A lot of clubs, it's not just Stockport and Wrexham. Mansfield have invested a lot over the last two, 3 years. Mm-hmm. Colchester at the moment, Gillingham, there's a hell of a lot of clubs. We've lost a couple of players that have decided to go back down into League Two because them guys have thrown out a lot of money. Salford have obviously invested, you know, 4 or 5 years, a hell of a lot of money. So I think it's about the spirit in the squad. I think what's different is in the Premier League, in the Championship, and a lot of the League One grounds, you're getting a beautiful surface, you're getting a nice stadium, and a lot of the teams are really structured in the way that they play. I think the League Two is really vast. So you get the teams like Stockport who are really good footballers, these loads of rotations, and you can see clearly what they're trying to do. But then there'll be 6 to 8 teams that will, you know what, if you're not prepared to scrap and fight on maybe a windy day with a small stadium and it affects the elements coming and the pitch isn't great and you're not prepared to win the first ball, the second ball and be in the right position, if you do lose them two things, then it can be a struggle. You know, what I do is obviously I go, you talked about going up from previous experience. So in my office, I have every single formation that we've played against. So every formation that I've played, and every formation that I've played against and what has worked and what hasn't worked, we've made this decision. And I've got files and files of different, like playing against different systems. And when we're coming up in the future, I'll go back to that. We played against that system and we really struggled against Doncaster and against Mansfield. They play 3-4-3 with two tens and one striker.
Yeah.
And our 4-2-3-1, we just wasn't shifting. We just wasn't getting up to the ball. It was causing a load of problems. And it's the first time that I'd ever come across that system. And I was like, we ended up changing, matching them up. So when our strikers jumped to their centre-halves, our midfield players jumped, and then our centre-halves jumped to their number 10s. and it worked beautifully. So every time that we play that system now, against that system, we just do certain things that have worked for us in the past. And I think that, you know, the likes of Nigel Clough, the guys that have been at that level now, should have a real good idea of what is required to be. You know, Dave Chandler came up last year, struggled in the first 10 games, but then got his club really going well. I think they'll be really strong because not only have they got big money, Nick Powell is for League Two is a ridiculous signing. So I think them guys that have been there, you've experienced the grounds, nothing's going to be a shock to you. Then, it could be 8, it could be 10 teams that win that league. But for me, if you finish above Wrexham or Stockport next year and Mansfield, then you'll be there or thereabouts.
We'll certainly keep our eyes peeled on that one. Moving into where you find yourselves now with League One, we saw some big teams eventually climb out after spending a fair amount of time in League One that have gone up into the Championships, Plymouth Ipswich, of course, doing so very, very well, Sheffield Wednesday. But that's not to say that just because those have gone, it leaves, quote-unquote, smaller teams. It doesn't, does it? Big teams still in League One. Big teams still there to be got at. Derby County obviously had the disappointment of not being able to qualify for the playoffs. I remember speaking to Paul Warne last year. He was very, very aware, of course, of what the job, what the task was in hand. But as you said, you mentioned former clubs of yours in the likes of Blackpool. But Barnsley's disappointment at losing in the playoff final. Pompey, perennial favourites because of the size of the fan base and how vocal that particular fan base is. And we don't quite know as yet what we're going to see from Reddy moving forward. But again, it's that tough one where the minute you start listing teams, so many just keep jumping into your mind about who could possibly be up there. So I don't sense any trepidation from you or Leighton Orient about how you go about it, but it's a sizable task to think, isn't it, that back-to-back promotions sat here right now before a ball's been kicked in a League One season would be a momentous achievement and a monumental task.
Oh, it'd be an unbelievable achievement. You've just named all the clubs, but the fact of the matter is, you know, Derby should never be in League One. Derby is one, you know, there's some big clubs in this league, but Derby is an absolute monster. He should never be anywhere near. But there's a reason why they're in League One. That things off the pitch haven't been right, or things on the pitch haven't been right. So what we've got to get in our heads is that we're going to play against 23 teams this year that are all League One players. For one reason or another, the League One players, and for one reason or another, the League One clubs. You know, the size of the stadium, the size of the supporter base are not going to win these guys football games. It's what the manager does, it's what the players does on the pitch. And we've just spoke about the experience. You know, Paul Warne, you know, he's very experienced at Rotherham getting teams out of the League One, so nothing's going to be a shock to them. So I would definitely put Derby as favourites. Warney's allowed to get in there. He's got the second half of last season. He knows the players, and now I think he'll feel comfortable in his environment. I think they've recruited really, really well, players that have won promotion from League One to the Championship before. But we can take it two ways. We can think, okay, it's Leighton Orient and we're going to play Derby, Reading, Charlton, all these big clubs, and are we going to sit in, are we going to be passive, and we're going to wait to see what the opposition does and take it out of our hands? And we're not going to do that. We're going to attack it, and we're going to say, you know what, we're going to play the way that we play, and if yous are good enough to beat us and you're just better players than us, then we're going to hold our hands up and say that's fine. But of a 46 game season, what I want to do is, if we tack everyone, you know, we'd like to think that we get enough points to get where we want to do. If we're passive and we're deep and we're just waiting to get beat, I just don't. How do you evolve from that? How do you get? Yeah. Do you know, if we attack every single game and it's not quite right, we can identify little things that we need to improve or little positions that we need to improve. So I think that's the way forward.
And does it, that jump up in the level, does it mean that you find out even more about players that you already know really well? I'm thinking of Ethan Galbraith. I'm thinking of, as you said, about Jordan Brown and a new contract. Jane Sweeney, your young player who people talk a lot about. Is there an element of excitement as a manager to rub your hands together and say, well, I've prepared you boys, let's go and show everyone around what Leighton Orient can do in League One?
Well, for me, Brooks, the difference between League Two and League One is not huge. Mm. Apart from these big clubs, the difference in wages that the players can earn is not, it's not life-changing. Mm-hmm. But now they're in a position that if they get to the top echelons of League One and we manage to get in a Championship in the next 2-3 years, you've been in a Championship, the money in the Championship now he's not quite Premier League, but he's huge, huge sums of money. So the rewards for these lads are there. If you put the work in, if you put the dedication in, you know, not only can you change your life and your family's life and your kids' life, but, you know, your parents and everybody can feel off the bat. It's a huge, huge opportunity. But what I will say is, you've just mentioned Jordan Brown, Jaden Sweeney and Ethan Galbraith. We do now have a base of players that have 300-400 games and have played in League One. We've got experience. We've got people, you know, we signed Joe Piggott, we signed Jordan Graham from Birmingham.
Yeah.
Played the last two seasons, 50 games in a championship. So we have got a real core players that are experienced. And then off the back of that, you know, you've got these exciting youngsters that, you know, there's a platform for you. We're gonna give you everything that you need. Go and embrace it and go and enjoy yourself. And and if you put every single day, like your life depends on it, in training and in games, you never know, the world's your oyster. Once you get to this level, you can step up very quickly.
You mentioned the championship and the size of the task involved in the championship. I think it's 19 out of the 24 clubs involved have all played in the Premier League, which in itself is a staggering stat. To see the teams that are there, that you obviously, a team like Leicester, that again people are looking at as relatively firm favourites, with the likes of Leeds and Southampton as well. It's again another league, and we always class it and market it as one that's very unpredictable. But there is a great swing in the strength of the teams that are involved in that. What's your take on that as a division? Because it has grown, as you quite rightly say, it has mushroomed for a lot of teams. And then the cherry of being just that one division away from the Premier League. What's the pressure like in that? What's the focus like in that? Because as you say, you've got a group of players that you just never know. I could be sat here talking to you in 12 months' time, and it could be an Orient side that has done the unthinkable, that has managed to get themselves on that first rung of the ladder to some really big teams. What is the championship, and what does it mean to you, and what are you looking forward to about it this season?
For me, the championship's one of the best leagues, because, like you say, even though, and Burnley a little bit of a freak last year, because it was, in terms of the way that they played football, they could just make teams suffer a hell of a lot. But in general, bottom can beat top. They're very evenly matched teams, and I've never seen a championship like this, where teams like Watford, West Brom, predominantly yo-yo teams from the Premier League to the Championship, they might not even be the players, or they're not even favourites to get in the playoffs. So it's going to be a really intriguing league. The thing that I love, my chairman's actually frightened to death of trying of getting into the Championship, because obviously you look at these lists and League One clubs lose. No football clubs make money until maybe the Premier League to do when they get the TV money. But in general, no clubs really make money. It's about trying to be sustainable and trying to make your losses as minimal as you can. So my chairman's scared to death, because the League One teams might lose 1, 2, 3, 4 million. And you look at the reports that are coming out from these championship clubs, and they are losing vast amounts of money. And the reason that is, Brooks, is because they're trying to chase that dream. The Premier League is one step away from where all that money that you've invested, you get it back in one hit. Mm. And all of a sudden, your brand now is a global brand. It's in the best league in the world. There's a new TV deal coming in next year. Mm-hmm. And it's the best league in the world, I would say, at the moment, since Messi and Ronaldo have left Spain. No one really speaks about La Liga, even though it is a great league. Italian league is coming a little bit back, the German league. But then after that, I think I would rather watch the Championship instead of the French league, the Portuguese league, a lot of other European leagues. And I'll go as far as to say that now that Ronaldo and Messi have left the Spanish league, I'd rather watch Championship games. I think it's entertainment. A lot of the stadiums are full, passionate, you know, and you can see a lot of teams going hammer and tongue. You don't get like a Premier League game where it's really tactical, where you look at Luton, Sheffield United next year, they're going away to Man City and Chelsea, and you know what's coming. They're trying to keep the score and they're trying to stay in the game as long as possible. And tactically, it's interesting. Whereas, you know, a lot of the championships, okay, we think you're better than you. So we think we're better than you. Mm. You think you're better than us, and we're just going to go at it. And it makes for intriguing watching.
It'll be It's one that, as we're all sat here at the dawn of a new season, we're fascinated to see how it pans out. Take Leicester then, with Enzo Maresca coming in, a former assistant of Pep Guardiola. You just spoke very glowingly about what Pep's done at Manchester City, and it's been a joy to watch. To step out from under the shadow, we saw what Mikel Arteta did with Arsenal. We're now going to see what Maresca can do with Leicester City as favourites with money to spend. Is it pressure on them to be top of the tree come the end of next of this season?
I think there's always pressure on the relegated teams because they do have that financial clout. You look at Leicester's first two signings, Harry Winks, 11 million, Connor Cody, 8 million. It makes a statement straight away. In terms of the manager there, I don't know too much of him. In terms of his coaching ability, then if he hasn't took a lot of things from Pep, then you'd be slightly worried. So I would imagine in coaching terms, if Pep trusts him to come on his staff and trusts him to be involved in his network, then I would say he's a very, very good coach. The difference being is Pep has the run of Man City. So yeah. Man City are one of the richest clubs in the world, but Pep is the boss. If he tells Jack Grealish and Phil Foden that they're not in a squad and stay away from the club for 3 weeks, like he did several years ago, no one questions him. He's the boss. He's the godfather of the club. When Mikel Arteta went for Arsenal, you know, he struggled for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I've watched the series on Arsenal.
Oh, the documentary.
Yeah, the documentary. I thought it was a brilliant documentary. Mm-hmm. And you could see that he was suffering at times. And I think Edu was a brilliant leaning board. I thought the board at Arsenal were fantastic. They'd made young signings. It is a project. And all of a sudden now, Mikel Arteta come through that. And it looks like Arteta is the boss of Arsenal. Yes. Aubameyang out the club. And when you've got that persona of a manager that transforms to the players, go, look, we don't want it to be a prison camp, but it is most definitely not a holiday camp. Yeah. Okay. And once you know that they're the boss and decisions are being made, it's all down to the manager. That means that you're in a real power. You know, you're in a position of strength. If you go into a new club like he's gone into Leicester, and all of a sudden he's making decisions, and maybe things are being taken away from him, then that maybe cloud his coaching characteristics and his managerial characteristics, and it can not be as black as white as that. So I hope he goes in. I do know the Leicester board not very well, but obviously I was there as a player when he took over.
Yeah.
Fantastic people, will back the manager, so I don't see any problems there. But you know, these people that do leave Pep, I think it's important that he chose the right club. I think that's why Arteta went to Arsenal, because he was trusted a long-term job and he's doing a fantastic job.
So that's a newbie in the Championship. One who is very definitely not a newbie in the Championship, and I say that with the greatest respect, is Neil Warnock. Signed on again with Huddersfield Town, pulled them away from danger, and it looked relatively straightforward at the end of last season. Over 1,600 games in charge. We're looking at the best part of 50 years worth of football management. Is Richie Wellens going to be sat there in that amount of time doing exactly the same thing, managing football clubs, working on players, working on owners, on chairmen, on CEOs, buzzing off the fans, and still having that same kind of grit, determination and fire?
Yeah, do you know what? When you love the game, the easy thing is to say absolute no chance, because it does grind you down at times, and it's a really taxing job. You're the guy that has to make the decisions before everybody has hindsight, and then the questions all your decisions afterwards. So it's a really, really difficult job. But when you love the game, nobody tells me that Neil Warnock don't love football. I mean, I watched a lot of his interviews and some of his games at the end of the season, but. You know, what a guy, what a personality, charisma. Did he go in there and go, listen, lads, we're going to do this tactically, that blah, blah, blah. No, we didn't have time. What he was a figure, loads of experience. He put smiles on faces. He got the crowd involved straight away. You see him walking around the crowd and getting them going. I think him and Ronnie Jepson done a fantastic job. But, you know, it's about managing people. He went in there and he managed people, not a football side, but just if you... Pretty powerful when you get 11 guys running for you and fighting for you. So, if I make 1,600 puts, then I'll be very surprised. And I will say, if I look as good as Neil at that age as well, I'll take that as well.
Is the football equivalent of Mick Jagger saying he's not going to be singing Satisfaction when he turns 80?
Yeah.
And he's just turned 80 and he's still singing I Can't Get No Satisfaction. The Championship, obviously, that global impact, that global appeal, none more so relevant than news breaking just today of Tom Brady getting involved in Birmingham City, which I think was as left field as you could possibly see, with the greatest respect, of course, to Birmingham City. But once again, shows that global appeal, doesn't it, on English football, on the Championship, on the EFL, the strength of the pyramid, the strength, the promise of potential Premier League dreamland, and how it's managed to infiltrate the world, hasn't it?
Well, you've got the golfers trying to buy leads. You've got loads of people. Tom Brady doesn't need any more fame, does he? But you look at someone like Abramovich at Chelsea.
Yes,
he's a billionaire, but no one really knows him. Mm-hmm. Even though he's a billionaire, no one really knows him. As soon as he takes over Chelsea, he's one of the most recognisable faces in the world. So I think that these owners are quite clever because once you take over a brand in England, obviously, I think all your other businesses as well can get a lot of kickback off the back of that because, you know, there is something about being a football chairman or involved in English football. It's the best country in the world to be playing football. So I also think it's the best country. And Birmingham's obviously a brilliant city. So, you know, it's a brilliant city in itself. It's probably an hour on a train from London. So in terms of investment opportunities, I would say that's pretty attractive.
We'll certainly keep our eye on that one. Back to matters at hand, back to Leyton Orient matters at hand. You kick off at the weekend, Charlton, a relatively short distance. Thoughts ahead of that game? Thoughts ahead of what Charlton could possibly throw your way? Is it an overall feeling of excitement and expectation?
In terms of Charlton, we played them in pre-season, actually. We played them in Spain in pre-season, which is very rare, that apart from the Premier League boys that play each other in foreign countries. It's very rare that you get people playing against each other. We'd organised it probably 4 months ago. So we just thought, you know what, let's play. So we got an idea of how they play. We've obviously watched all the pre-season games. Very attacking.
I suppose it's a slightly different vibe playing each other in Spain in pre-season than it will be that first game back in League One.
I know, but plus, when you're there, when you watch plays on a video or on a laptop, it's very, very different to actually see them in the flesh and seeing them for real. So you get, even though tactically things might not change and we won't be the same, you actually see where, okay, he plays forward first time. He can slow the game down. He does this. So it gives you a good insight to what the actual individuals do rather than the team. But they're very attacking. Two wing backs, very high. Two strikers who, you know, in Alfie May had a really productive season last year and has got a good move. They spent heavily on Panush Kamra, Terry Taylor. So I think that is a club on the way up. It looks like the finances are back in order because, you know, the spend at the moment looks to be pretty big. Obviously, a huge football club, great stadium. And in Dean Holden, a guy that I really, really like. I've known him for a long, long time. Me and him was actually at Man United Centre of Excellence together at under 14. So we've known each other for a long, long time. Got a lot of time for him. But big football club, and we're just going to go and attack it. We ain't going to sit in. We're going to be aggressive. And let's see where it takes us.
I bet that's flown by, hasn't it? School of Excellence at 14, now facing each other on a Saturday afternoon in League One, fighting to see how well you start the season. Don't worry, I'm not going to get existential and start talking about men in the 40s and how quickly your youth goes flying by, but being able to fight through a School of Excellence, being able to have a career in football that you can look back on such a vast period of time, it's a blink of an eye type thing, isn't it?
Well, when you say it like that, it is a blink of an eye. But then when you think we played them in pre-season probably 6 weeks ago, that feels like it's years and years ago. Yeah. So that's sometimes really difficult. But it just goes, two guys that have we had it smooth all the way through our careers? No, Dean was released from Bolton. He's had to fight. He's had to scrap for a playing career. He's then done his mentorship under Lee Johnson at Oldham and then at Bristol. And then he's been assistant at Stoke and he's got an opportunity. So I think he's two guys that come from, you know what, not the nicest areas in Manchester that are quite resilient and have had to suffer setbacks to get where we are today. So, yeah, like I say, I can't speak high enough. I hope I put him under real pressure after Saturday, though, when he kicks off with a defeat at home and all of a sudden he's under a little bit of pressure. So then he can build his resilience even more.
That typical Mank wit, yeah. Richie. I thoroughly enjoy it. I've got so much time for it. And speaking of so much time, mate, you've given us so much of your time, which we're very, very happy about. So we're speaking to you a couple of days before the first game of the season, just to round it off, because it was something that I'd not experienced as a player. So Thursday's off for your side, more often than not, if there's no midweek game, of course. That means that the thought process behind that is that they peak together as one on a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, so Monday will be a recovery day. Mm-hmm. Tuesday will be a really hard day, but we'll do a session linked into how we're going to play on Saturday. That'll be out possession on Tuesday. Wednesday will be in possession, just dropping things in. Along mm-hmm. with the finishing, the crossing and all this, we'll just drip feed in. Thursday, you just get a rest. And then obviously, we think that Friday, you're coming in, you're getting the cobwebs off. We'll do a little bit of tactical, hoping that they peak on a Saturday. You know, yeah. When I played and it was always Wednesdays off, you have the Wednesday off, you come in Thursday, get your cobwebs off. Friday, you're flying. And then sometimes Saturday, you can just be like, we've done 3 days on the bounce now, especially if it's an away game or whatever it may be. So it's worked well for us in the last 18 months, so we'll stick with that.
Well, certainly, there's no madness to it. It's a method that absolutely works and has served you so very, very well. Richie, as ever, my friend, it's been an absolute pleasure. We can call on you at any point to make sure that you give us an in-depth look at not just obviously Leyton Orient and how they get on this season, but across the three divisions. So from now, it's just a big good luck to you all. Keep up with the good work and hopefully speak to you in due course over the course of the season as your boys are flying. Richie Wellens on the official EFL podcast. Thank you. And just before we go, it's time for a little game of 72 in 72 as Leeds United's Stuart Dallas tries to name as many of the 72 EFL league clubs as he can in 72 seconds. And it's not as easy as you might think.
Hi, I'm Stuart Dallas and this is EFL 72 in 72. Leeds, Leicester, Southampton, Birmingham, Cardiff, Blackpool, Accrington, Shrewsbury, Salford, Harrogate, Derby, Wigan, Hull, Cardiff, total head loss, Harrogate. Oh my God. I've totally went blank. Can I start that again? Let me start again. Can I start again, though? No? Oh God. Barnsley. I totally went. Oh my God. My knowledge is shocking. Where are we? Doncaster. Sheffield Wednesday. Wigan, Third Wigan, Huddersfield. That's harder than what you think, you know. That's hard. I totally went blank there.
See, I told you it wasn't easy. A simple game in theory, a little more difficult in practice. Well, that's about it for this episode. A big thank you to Stuart Dallas, Richie Wellens and Russell Martin for joining me this week, the first episode of the season. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. Listen, that's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.